A look at a Trump-Vance foreign policy.
He did not even mention the wars in Gaza or in Ukraine. However, he did launch into quite a few criticisms about China.
Plus, Evan Gershkovich, the American reporter jailed in Russia, had another day in court.
The closing arguments in this case, which is widely seen as a sham trial, these sort of false accusations of espionage, the closing hearings will be held Friday.
And later, a controversial politician visits the Al-Aqsa Mosque, President Zelensky visits England, and more unrest in Kenya. Today is Thursday, July 18th, and this is VOA's Flashpoint, Global Crises. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. We'll get to the Republican National Convention in a moment, but first, some health news about President Joe Biden. He canceled his appearance at a campaign event in Las Vegas Wednesday night after testing positive for COVID-19. While the White House says his symptoms are mild, this does not help him project an image of vitality and strength amid intra-party fighting over his ability to win the upcoming election. Moving on now to Milwaukee and the Republican convention, Republican vice presidential candidate J.D. Vance took center stage as he embraced Donald Trump's familiar America First approach to foreign policy and security. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more from Milwaukee.
In his first speech on the national political stage, Donald Trump's vice presidential nominee, U.S. Senator J.D. Vance, came out swinging.
We're done importing foreign labor. We're going to fight for American citizens and their good jobs and their good wages.
Relatively unknown across the United States, Vance, a Yale Law School graduate who served in the U.S. military for 6 years, has served in elected office for about a year and a half. He was introduced by his wife, Usha Vance.
Chosen to help lead our country through some of its greatest challenges, I am grateful to all of you for the trust you've placed in him.
Wednesday night was a chance not only for Vance to introduce himself to the American public, but to prove his foreign policy credentials.
Together, we will make sure our allies share in the burden of securing world peace. No more free rides for nations that betray the generosity of the American taxpayer.
Delegates said they were not bothered by Vance's lack of experience.
Really what we're electing here is potential leadership. And he has got proven potential leadership, and he's not one of us old fossils.
Or his past comments criticizing Trump.
I love that he's young and he can be molded. And he is embracing the America First, which I also appreciate. And I think under Trump's tutelage, he can go pretty far.
The convention closes Thursday evening with Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump's acceptance speech, his first time speaking in public since he survived an assassination attempt. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, at the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
As we just heard, J.D. Vance spoke about security and foreign policy, among other topics, at the Republican convention. For more on what the foreign policy of a Trump-Vance administration might look like, I spoke with our White House bureau chief, Patsy Wiedekuswara. But I asked her first if there was any update on President Biden's condition after his COVID diagnosis.
No, there isn't. Right now, he is self-isolating in his home in Delaware. The White House says that he will continue to carry out all his duties fully during that time. They promised to provide us with regular updates on his status, but nothing so far.
Okay, well, the one thing that did change recently is J.D. Vance gave his acceptance speech accepting the vice presidential nomination at the Republican convention in Milwaukee. And in that speech, along with introducing himself to voters, he laid out his vision and the Republican Party's vision for a foreign policy. Can you tell us what he said, what we can expect from a Trump-Vance administration?
Well, from the speech itself, it was more about introducing J.D. Vance as he formally accepted his party nomination for a vice presidential candidate. So he did not even mention the wars in Gaza or in Ukraine. However, he did launch into quite a few criticisms about China. I mean, this is somebody who is the author of the best-selling memoir and also movie Hillbilly Elegy. So he really described the kind of social and economic harm that deindustrialization has inflicted upon some parts of America, including his community. So he talked about how the U.S. was flooded with cheap Chinese goods, cheap foreign labor, Chinese fentanyl, and he pinned the blame on Joe Biden. He said, Joe Biden screwed up and my community paid the price. He's echoing again Trump's accusation that China is stealing manufacturing jobs from the U.S., particularly from the Midwestern part of the country where he's from. So a lot of it was focused on China in terms of rhetoric. In terms of policy, he was only saying that Trump Biden's administration will protect the wages of American workers and stop the Chinese Communist Party from building their middle class on the backs of American citizens, end quote.
Now, notably, Vance has said before that he doesn't believe the United States needs to support Ukraine. He believes that should be up to Europe to do.
Yeah, so in terms of foreign policy priorities, in that sense, he's very much aligned, even maybe more so than President Trump, in insisting that Washington reduce its support for Ukraine and force Europeans to play a bigger role in their own security. He did shock Europeans earlier this year in the Munich Security Conference in February, saying that he does not think that Vladimir Putin is an existential threat to Europe. So, of course, this was this prompted criticism from many circles. And, you know, this is creating a lot of panic among people in not just in Europe, but also in Kyiv, and also among the circles of Republicans who believe in these traditional Republican values of maintaining U.S. global dominance, you know, pursuing free trade and development, encouraging the spread of democracy around the world. Those ideas are part of the, you know, old guard Republican, and we can see that from Trump picking J.D. Vance, those ideas are no longer popular, are no longer the mainstream in the party.
It's a stark contrast to Ronald Reagan, who, as a Republican, is held in the highest regard by the party when he said to Gorbachev to tear down this wall. And now you've got J.D. Vance saying that Putin, that Russia, isn't really a threat.
Absolutely. He did not mention the Russian invasion, as I have mentioned, but he did need a nod to the so-called Reaganite Republicans who support American interventionism abroad and whose views on Ukraine clashed with his own. Last night in his speech, he appealed for a party that is unafraid to debate ideas. So he knows exactly what he's dealing with, and he's telling them that, look, the way we have done this for many, many decades, and he does not believe that it's working out, and he believes that it's time for the U.S. to perhaps not go so much into isolationism, because that is not what he's advocating, certainly not in Israel, but prioritizing foreign policy goals. So he has made in several appearances clear what his goals are. And that is basically he wants the Israelis and the Arab Sunni states to police their own region. He wants the Europeans to police their own region so that the U.S. may be able to focus more on the threat to China. So that is his stated foreign policy goals in many occasions. But of course, this is not a new goal. I mean, this is exactly what President Barack Obama pursued while he was in office, this pivot to Asia doctrine, which has yet to happen because the U.S., as you know, is still bogged down by conflict by both Europe and India.
Now, Vance said that he wants the Israelis and the Sunnis to police their own neighborhood, so to speak. But at the same time, he's saying the U.S. should support Israel with financial and military aid. How is supporting Israel with financial and military aid and not supporting Ukraine with financial and military aid squared? How does he make sense of that?
So in several events, he has made clear that the reason why he views these two conflicts differently and why he believes that the two should be treated differently is because of U.S. interests. I mean, he made that clear. He said that Israel is a huge interest for the U.S. in the Middle East. He's not saying that Ukraine is not. However, he believes that that should be a European problem. And the other thing is his Christian belief. I mean, he is very upfront about this. He's saying that his Christian belief means that he and many others in the U.S. Support Israel because of their religious beliefs. And so this is indeed a reflection of conservative evangelical views in today's Republican parties and this kind of nationalist, white Christian nationalist thinking that has grown under Trump's grip of the party.
VOA's White House Bureau Chief, Patsy Wiedekuswara. Patsy, thanks for your time. Thanks for your reporting on this.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Changing gears now, it's a busy day at VOA's Press Freedom Desk. Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich was in court Thursday in Russia, and Thursday also marks 9 months since Russian-born journalist Alsu Kumersheva was taken into custody. I'm joined by VOA's Press Freedom editor, Jessica Jarit. We know that Evan Gershkovich had a court appearance today. Do we know what happened?
We don't know too much about what happened. It's a closed-door trial, and media were not provided any access to Evan today. But this case is suddenly moving very quickly. He was originally meant to have the second hearing in mid-August. This week, we learned that hearing would actually be held on Thursday, and the court today said that the closing arguments in this case, which is widely seen as a sham trial, these sort of false accusations of espionage, the closing hearings will be held Friday.
And just to remind our listeners, Gershkovich was on a reporting trip for the Wall Street Journal. He was investigating, but for his reporting, not for the CIA, as the Russians have alleged.
That's absolutely correct. He was just doing what any journalist does. He was out in the field. He was accredited as a journalist to work in Russia. He was normally based in Moscow, but he was in this eastern region of Russia when he was picked up by authorities in March 2023. And Russia says he was working on orders of the CIA to collect evidence about a factory covering military equipment. But the U.S. denies he was working for him, and Gershkovich, his employer, his family, his supporters all vehemently deny these accusations. He was just being a journalist, doing what journalists do.
Gershkovich isn't the only American journalist imprisoned in Russia. There's also the story of Alsu Kumersheva, and today marks her 9th month in Russian captivity. What's her story and how is it different?
Alsu is a Russian-American journalist. She normally works in Prague for VOA sister network, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. She traveled to Russia last year as a personal trip. She has an elderly mother. She wanted to look after her. When she tried to leave Russia, she was stopped at the airport and her travel documents were confiscated. Originally, she was accused of failing to register a U.S. passport. In October, while still being held and waiting, hopefully, for the return of her travel documents, authorities took her into custody with the new charge of failing to register as a so-called foreign agent. RFERL and Kumersheva deny these charges, but she's been held in custody for 9 months. During that time, although they initially accused her of failing to register her U.S. passport, they're not recognizing her U.S. citizenship. She's denied U.S. consular visit. And more importantly, she has two young daughters, teen daughters, and she has not been allowed any contact with them.
So Gershkovich is charged with espionage for actually doing the investigation, doing the work of a journalist. Kumersheva is charged with not registering as a foreign agent, so not necessarily for being a journalist. But as you mentioned, this sort of speaks to a larger campaign of pressure, of intimidation that Russia is pushing onto foreign journalists from all places and issuing many more warrants. Can you speak to some of this new wave of pressure that we're seeing?
Yeah, in the last couple of weeks, we've really seen a ramping up of arrest warrants and convictions being issued in absentia. So there are journalists at very prominent Russian media outlets who now will work in exile around Europe. They're starting to learn that they're on arrest warrant lists. The US-based writer Masha Gessen, who works for the New York Times and the New Yorker, was convicted in absentia this week by a court in Moscow and sentenced to 8 years in prison for allegedly spreading disinformation about the Russian military. Most of these charges are related to independent media's coverage of Russia's full-scale invasion, reporting about war crimes in Bucha, criticizing or seemingly criticizing Russia for its invasion of an independent territory. And we're just seeing the sort of ramping up of these cases. Already by the end of the year, the Committee to Protect Journalists had documented 22 journalists who have been detained in Russia as of late 2023. What's significant there is nearly all of those are foreign nationals. So most independent Russian media and journalists have left Russia. But if you're a foreign journalist, there seems to be a sort of higher price on your head in terms of being able to have Russia detain you.
VOA's Press Freedom Editor, Jessica Jarit. Jessica, thanks for joining us today. Thanks for your analysis.
Thanks, Steve.
You're listening to Flashpoint, Global Crises from the Voice of America. I'm Steve Karish in Washington. President Volodymyr Zelensky of Ukraine is in England. We'll get an update from Kyiv in a moment. First, though, in the Middle East, the pier built by the American military to supply aid is going away, and a controversial right-wing Israeli politician goes to the Al-Aqsa Mosque to say he's praying against a ceasefire. Kylie Vaughn has more.
On Thursday, Israel's far-right National Security Minister, Itamar Ben-Gvir, visited Jerusalem's Al-Aqsa Mosque, a move that could threaten the delicate ceasefire talks. It's considered one of Islam's holiest sites and Judaism's most sacred place, a vestige of two ancient Jewish temples, and has been the site of many previous protests. Gvir said he visited to pray for the safe return of the hostages, while also sharing his opinion on the negotiations. He explained that he is working hard to ensure Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu does not sign what Gvir calls a reckless deal to bring the hostages home, saying he hopes Netanyahu continues adding military pressure until Israel's victory is achieved. Gvir's visit to Jerusalem comes one day after Israeli delegation arrived in Egypt to continue ceasefire talks with Hamas, according to Egyptian officials. After positive signs that a deal may be close, doubts have grown after Israeli forces targeted Hamas military leader Mohammed Deif in a strike over the weekend. Meanwhile, the U.S. military ended its mission to operate a temporary pier that would deliver humanitarian aid to Gaza due to weather, technical, and security problems. The pier was only operational for 20 days and has not been used since June. The plan is now to ship the supplies on U.S. vessels to the Israeli port of Ashdod, which would then be transported to Gaza through an Israeli-controlled crossing, but the specifics remain unclear. Kylie Vaughn, VOA News.
The Ukrainian president is in England for a summit, and some Ukrainian POWs are headed home. VOA's Anna Chernikova has the story.
The president of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky, arrived in Great Britain on Thursday to take part in the European Political Community Summit in London. Zelensky also has a number of bilateral meetings with partners and the signing of new security agreements scheduled. He will also meet with His Majesty King Charles III, Prime Minister Keir Starmer, government officials and heads of defense companies. Also during the visit, an intergovernmental agreement in support of the Ukrainian defense industry will be signed. During the opening plenary of the summit, British Prime Minister Keir Starmer confirmed the allies' steadfast support for Ukraine and called on fighting Russian aggression together as the threat from Russia reaches across Europe. Zelensky mentioned that thanks to the Western bravery in lifting restrictions for Ukraine to use allies' weapons on Russian territory near the Kharkiv region border, Ukraine was able to stop the Russian advance on Kharkiv.
We have stopped the Russian advance on Kharkiv. Period. Putin has sacrificed tens of thousands of his citizens, but has achieved nothing significant. This was made possible by the bravery of our warriors and the bravery of our partners, who have lifted limitations on the use of Western weapons along our border.
He also said that the more effective Ukrainian air defense is, the more helpless Putin will be.
The more effective our air defense is, the more helpless Putin will be. The fewer restrictions we have on the use of effective weapons, the more Russia will seek peace.
Earlier on the evening of July 17th, President Volodymyr Zelensky announced the return of 95 Ukrainian prisoners of war from Russian captivity. Zelensky thanked the United Arab Emirates for mediating this release. He emphasized that Ukraine expects the return of all prisoners of war as soon as possible. Also in his evening address, Zelensky marked the occasion of the 10th anniversary of the downing of Malaysian Boeing flight MH17 by Russia. He once again expressed his condolences to the families of the victims and called on the European justice system to do everything possible to bring those responsible to justice. Zelensky emphasized that this is one of many crimes against humanity committed by Russia. Meanwhile, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg announced the appointment of Patrick Turner as the senior representative in Ukraine. Turner will begin his duties in Kyiv in September. As a senior representative, he will head the alliance representation in Ukraine, act as a coordinator of NATO's interaction with the Ukrainian authorities in Kyiv, and coordinate NATO's efforts and provide the alliance with assessments and advice on the situation in Ukraine. Anna Chernikova, VOA News, Kyiv.
Police in Nairobi say criminal gangs are trying to take advantage of recent political unrest by using the demonstrations as cover to commit more crimes. Reuters' David Doyle has more.
Kenya's police have banned demonstrations in the heart of the capital, Nairobi, until further notice. That's after weeks of anti-government protests initially sparked by proposed tax hikes. Late on Wednesday, acting head of police Douglas Kanja-Kurocho said there was credible evidence that organized criminal groups are planning to take advantage of the ongoing protests to execute their attacks, including looting. No demonstrations will be permitted, the statement read, in the Nairobi Central Business District and its surroundings until further notice to ensure public safety. Some activists have since been sharing calls for people to gather with camping gear at Uhuru Park, next to the Central Business District. A Reuters reporter said there was a heavy police presence in the city on Thursday morning. Responding to the protest ban, activist Boniface Mwangi wrote on social media that the police and President William Ruto have no power to suspend rights guaranteed by the Constitution. At least 50 people are reported to have been killed in the youth-led protests amid clashes with police. The unrest has continued even after President Ruto scrapped the tax proposals and fired most of his cabinet. Activists are saying they want Ruto to resign and are calling for systemic changes to clean up corruption and address poor governance.
That's Reuters' David Doyle reporting. And that's going to wrap up today's show. There's more VOA coverage 24 hours a day on our website, voanews.com, and across our social media platforms. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thanks for listening. Until tomorrow, I'm Steve Karish.
For deeper dives and expert analysis, listen to VOA Podcasts. Issues in the News explores the biggest stories every weekend, while International Edition keeps you informed every weekday. Plus, with the 5-minute newscast at the top of every hour, you're always up to date.